Hello and welcome to the Nourish Balance Thrive podcast. My name is Christopher Kelly and today I'm joined by Gabriella Schneider. Hi, Gabriella.
Hi.
Gabriella is, how would I describe you? A young science writer and a cook and the creator of the blog beyondthebiteforlife.com, which I would highly recommend. I've just been reading through all your keto and AIP recipes this morning and you're really good at taking the pictures. I'm quite impressed by those.
Oh, thank you very much. And, it's a work in progress.
of course, isn't everything always?
Yeah.
And we had you on the podcast once before, but I very much doubt that anybody would have heard it because it was on, I actually have two podcasts. The other one is called the Paleo Baby Podcast. And that was the podcast, the Paleo Baby Podcast was the one where Julie interviewed you. And I listened to it again and the sound quality is really bad. Like you can hardly hear Julie at all. And I think it's because it was in our early days of podcasting. So I thought I should really get you back on and talk about some of what you talked about before. And the reason is, so for people that don't know, Gabriella is suffering from chronic Lyme disease. And when that original interview first went out, she was kind enough to write a guest post for my blog. And I will link to that post in the show notes for this episode. And I was looking at the stats in Google the other day and realized that this one article in less than a year has been read by 6,000 people for an average of 5 minutes each. And I'm like, what the heck? Like, why is it? I mean, maybe these don't sound like big numbers to someone else listening to this that has a really successful blog. But for me, that's by far the most interesting and important article on my website. So I thought, you know, I better get you back on and tell us about this. So, why don't we start from the beginning? Why don't you tell me about your chronic Lyme?
Well, chronic Lyme for me was something that I dealt with. I mean, we don't know exactly when I got the Lyme, like the initial infection, but we think it was sometime in my earlier years, like age 6 or something around there. But the symptoms didn't really start presenting themselves until around the age of 12, I would say. And it would come in spurts. So like rotating months of 1 month, it would be joint pain. The next month I would have really bad headaches. The next month I just have a shot immune system and I would get, you know, sinus infection or something like that. So we went to the doctors on and off, but they could never, you know, figure out anything. They just thought I was growing or, you know, having growing pains. So we didn't really think too much of it. We just kind of put it on the back burner. Until I believe it was, oh man, it's been so long now, it's hard to like remember exact dates, but I believe it was 2010, I believe it was the summer of 2010. I kept having these increase of symptoms and they kind of just kept piling on top of each other, but I just would, you know, kind of brush them off. And in the summer of 2010, one of those years, everything just came crashing in and I literally went for a run, came back. My blood pressure dropped significantly. I couldn't see. I was, you know, passing out and the exhaustion just hit me and the pain all throughout my body. And it's since that day that I've been battling the effects of chronic Lyme disease, what we figured out to be chronic Lyme disease about 6 months later.
Wow. So how did that affect your school life and how did it affect everything?
Well, it pretty much turned my life completely upside down. I initially that summer when I was always homeschooled, but I couldn't, my brain fog got so severe in the span of like 3 months that I couldn't, you know, I couldn't think straight. So I missed about a year and a half of school, of high school, but I've been able to catch up through different types of programs and testing. So I'm officially in college now.
Wow. Congratulations. That's fantastic.
Thank you.
So tell me about what you've been doing. Well, first, I guess the first question I'd like to ask is how did you know it was Lyme?
Well, we have a good friend whose daughter went through a very similar experience with chronic Lyme. And so she kind of had already been down the path at least halfway. So she knew what doctors to refer us to. And based off of how similar I was to her daughter, she was like, no, you need to see a Lyme literate neurologist, and then you need to see this functional medicine doctor in New York, and then you need to see this parasite doctor. And just, she kind of gave us the initial doctors to go see that would provide the right testing. So we were very lucky.
Okay. And then, so what have you been doing that's been helping you feel better? Because you sound fantastic now, and you've obviously got the energy to write this incredible blog. And if on the surface, it looks as if absolutely nothing wrong with you. So what have you been doing to help you feel better?
Well, I've done a lot of different things, and I think each thing has had its place in healing my body, and not quite, you know, not just one thing has taken me all the way there. Mm-hmm. So currently I'm doing the PK protocol, which I've been doing since, it's been a little bit over a year now. I started last summer, and that's the IV and supplement and diet regimen that mm-hmm. I've been doing through a functional medicine doctor in New York. And that's pretty much taken me out of the loop of going nowhere. That's really easy to get in with chronic Lyme disease.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's what the guest post that you wrote for us was about, the PK protocol. And I've read the article several times, and it is beautifully written. And you are a really good writer. I've spent some time on your site this morning, and I wish I had your writing skills. It's very, I'm quite jealous. But why don't you tell us about the PK protocol? Can you, without getting into too many technical details, can you tell us sort of a little bit more about it?
Sure. So, the reason I got into it was because, like I said, I was in this never-ending cycle of just not going anywhere. None of the supplements or treatments I was doing, they weren't doing anything. My body just kept hitting the brick wall. Mm-hmm. So my functional medicine doctor referred me to the PK protocol because it addresses the body at a cellular level. So pretty much, it's used for a wide variety of illnesses, from different, mainly for neurological diseases, I believe, and like autism, mm-hmm. I believe, and Alzheimer's and all those different things. But so I'm doing it because ultimately it addresses the body at a cellular level, and through the testing that they do through the body bio lab, they can tell the state of your cells and what they're deficient in and what they need to be restored and work properly, so mm-hmm. that the rest of your body can then function, or begin to function at least.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. And I'm a huge believer in that. I think it's the cellular biology is super important. Like, if you can make each and every cell happy, right. So that means it has the right hydration, and it has the right pH, and it has enough of the fat, carbohydrate, and protein to make energy, and it has oxygen, is kind of a big one. Then, you make happy cells, then you make happy tissue, and if you have happy tissue, you have happy organs, and if you have happy organs, the whole body. So you could just start from the bottom and work your way up. And the thing that's interesting about it is the testing. It's not, in some cases, that difficult to test for some of the individual things that make cells happy that I just talked about. So the PK protocol, then, you would recommend it then for anyone suffering from chronic Lyme?
I would, yeah. I wouldn't say, some people have reached, the article that I wrote for you, I get emails all the time mm-hmm. of people like asking, do you know a doctor here, or can you refer me to someone? I'm like, oh my goodness, it's crazy the amount of people. But it doesn't, so going into this, my doctor told me, I still battle different co-infections, but she was like, we're not going to tackle those with antibiotics because that'll totally take away from the benefits of the protocol. So it doesn't necessarily address, if you have like an active infection, it doesn't necessarily address the infection head on, mm-hmm. with killing it. It's more about restoring the body so that it can naturally fight it off. Mm-hmm. But I would still recommend it.
Okay. So it's not about killing spirochetes. You shouldn't make the mistake of thinking that's what this is.
Right.
But tell me about how the autoimmune protocol has fitted into this. So the autoimmune paleo protocol, I think most people listening to this interview will know what that is. But just in case you don't, the paleo diet, where you're eliminating grains and sugars and, you know, what else? Wheat and dairy and corn. I guess those are grains. But the autoimmune protocol goes further, and it says no nuts or seeds or nightshades or spices or eggs, which can be quite difficult for some people to implement, but it does get great results, and I've seen it a number of times now. So how does, I know you've been like most of the recipes on your blog at AIP, so how does that fit into all this?
So AIP is something I came to before the PK protocol. I noticed, you know, I've been addressing the diet portion of everything since the beginning, since GI symptoms were one of like one of the first major things that was wrong with me. So AIP, I mean, I came to paleo, and then I figured out that, you know, like nightshades, eggs, all those things, I severely spiked my inflammation and my gut issues. So I, you know, I went on the protocol, and it's something I still do. For the most part, I've been able to, you know, reintroduce certain foods. Like right now, I'm working on reintroducing egg yolks, which I believe is a success, but I won't speak too quickly. And then, you know, different things like mustard. But I added that to what I'm doing with the PK protocol, because the PK protocol is definitely a lot lower carb and high emphasis on a lot of fat, you know, more than like a typical, you know, AIP or paleo diet. And I was kind of hesitant, you know, to totally abandon AIP because it kept my inflammation level significantly lower. So even though it was difficult, I decided to fuse both of them together because I found that that's what fit my body best. And I mean, that's what I'm doing right now. Eventually, I don't know which one I'll lean more towards as my body heals, but ultimately I'm using it to heal my gut, because the PK protocol, I have not found that it has directly influenced the state of my gut. I feel like how I eat affects it more than like the supplements and the IVs. So that's pretty much like the main reason why I'm doing it, is to heal my gut.
Okay. So I didn't realize this. So the PK protocol, it's not just the intravenous infusions. It's it also has a diet and talks about other things that you should be doing in order to heal.
Yeah. So Dr. Patricia Kane, the woman doctor behind the whole protocol in the U.S., there isn't a lot of information online about this. I've only learned certain stuff through the papers my doctor has given me or what she has talked to Dr. Patricia Kane about. So it's definitely, I mean, I probably eat more ketogenic than a typical person on, if they were on the specific PK protocol diet, but that's simply because before I came to the protocol, I wasn't eating legumes, I wasn't eating berries because of parasites, so different things like that. But the overall gist is it's paleo minus certain foods that are higher in sugar, and no you know, natural sugars like maple syrup and honey, and it's just really high fat, because based on your blood work, they tell you what fatty acids you're deficient in and which ones you need to pretty much stock up on in food, like food sources.
Oh, wow. How interesting.
So, yeah. So it's, I mean, it can kind of get, I get emails and people are like, so what is the PK protocol diet? I've never really seen anything on it, or my doctor hasn't even told me there's a specific diet. But if I were to, I would call it paleo, like an overall picture, it's paleo. But then I believe certain doctors emphasize the low carb, high fat aspect of it more than others.
Okay. And so you saw, when you say you saw a reduction in your inflammation when you switched onto the autoimmune protocol, was that, did you have specific symptoms in mind, or was this markers you saw on some of the testing that you were doing?
It was, I based it off of symptoms. Like if I ate nightshades, I get this weird pain all down the side of my legs and joints that just is like my legs are on fire. And then different things, of course, nuts and seeds and eggs, they all cause significant GI distress and distension. And just different things like that, and headaches. Joint pain is another big symptom of mine. So that was one, that's, or that still is one huge marker of not eating those certain foods.
Mm-hmm. And then what difference did it make then? So if you saw a reduction in those symptoms, did it enable you to get back to schoolwork or be more active? What did it enable you to do on the AIP diet?
Yeah, it's enabled me to do, it's pretty much, it enabled me to cope, first of all, like just cope with my symptoms mm-hmm. that no doctor could really address. So I had to address them personally. And it's helped me become a lot stronger and give me a lot more stamina in the things I do. Because if I go off and eat something like that's not on AIP, it will just increase my symptoms to the point where I'm too much pain to do something. So I might be too much pain to like focus on my schoolwork or go to an appointment that I need to, those sort of things. So it's really just helped me live day-to-day life and be able to get the most out of it instead of adding symptoms.
That's pretty amazing, isn't it? When you think about it, it's like, okay, you got to eat something. If you eat this, then you get this result.
Right.
Pretty incredible. So, okay. So we're super confusing people here now. So we've talked about the autoimmune protocol, which is a certain type of the paleo diet. And we talked about the PK protocol that does have a diet component that is not well known. And then also you mentioned a high fat ketogenic intervention, which might also be helpful. So, so tell me about that. Have you been eating a ketogenic diet?
Are you asking me how have I, or
no,
have I been?
Have you? So you've been staying high fat ketogenic as well as AIP? Yes.
Yes. So I know carbs are like a big controversy.
Yeah. You're going to get shot down in flames for this.
So one thing, even while following AIP and all my different, protocols, one major aspect that no one could ever figure out was weight gain. I couldn't keep a steady weight. I just continually lost weight, even, you know, with all the carbs and starchy vegetables. I'm not even talking about fat here. I'm just talking about like muscle mass. I could not keep anything. I pretty much averaged around like 100 or a little lower. So that was a major issue coming to the PK protocol. And so she was like, oh, your fatty acids are, your cells are so deficient in these certain fats. Like you really need to cut out, you know, sweet potatoes, carrots, beets, those kind of foods, and just like put fat on everything. And it's kind of funny because people are like, well, ketogenic, you know, it makes you lose weight. And then there's the other people that are like, oh, fat will make you fat. But it's really what the ketogenic diet did for me in cutting out those starchy vegetables from AIP and adding the amount of fat is it really brought my body up to its ideal weight. So, I mean, a year later, I'm normal weight. I'm again what I was before I got sick. It restored my fatty acid, you know, profile. Mm-hmm. And it's really, it's worked incredibly for me. I still eat that way, you know, and unlike what some people think, you know, I'm not continuing to gain weight. I've kind of reached this spot that was my body's, you know, normal level. And that's where I am.
That's really interesting, isn't it? Because you're right. Most people think of a high fat ketogenic diet as the best way to lose weight. And I would agree. But in your instance, you returned to a more normal set point, which was to gain weight. That's it's interesting.
Right. Yeah. And nothing else could ever did it before.
Mm-hmm. And then was there, you know, you mentioned a neurologist, and I know it's neurological Lyme that you had or have. And so has do you think the being in ketosis has been helpful for that?
I think so. I mean, pretty much now, my brain just loves the fat. That's like the simplest way to say it.
Right.
And I mean, my mom, everyone in my family is like all, you know, getting on board with it. Like, oh, I need my fat to fuel my brain and my body. But I believe it definitely has helped. My neurological symptoms are, I mean, I don't even know if I have them 5% of the time anymore. So that's huge. And that's been a big component in being able to do college.
That's awesome. That's another life-changing experience. Tell me, were you, so how do you know, are you tracking blood ketones or are you using one of those breath meters or do you just think it's a ketogenic diet?
So I'm currently not tracking it, which is something my doctor's like, oh, Gaby, you need to track them. and I think I should as well. But I'm currently not.
Okay. So. Yeah, no, you know, I tracked it religiously for a while and then I sort of gave up and I thought, oh God, it was so hard to get into ketosis. I'm sure that if I tested again now, you know, I'd probably be nowhere near. And I was in ketosis. It was like,
right.
Yeah. So I think it's, once you establish a new normal way of eating, it's actually quite hard to get out of that rut, right? You kind of,
right.
And so yeah, unless something really crazy has changed, I don't think the blood markers will have changed much either.
No. And like, I've made sure to, you know, educate myself enough on it so that, you know, I understand like there's this gray area. If you're like feeling awful, you're obviously not in ketosis and all that kind of stuff. So.
Mm-hmm. And then, so tell me about the Primal Blueprint certification. I was really excited to ask you about that. You did the certification, right?
Yes, I did it. So I did it before I jumped into college work. So it was like last fall into the spring, I think, early spring. But it was great. I loved every second of it.
Okay. So for the people that don't know, the Primal Blueprint certification is Mark Sisson's training course. And so what's included? I don't know anything about it, really.
So it's a lot of, I mean, I liked how science-oriented it was. Because going into it, I was kind of like, oh, am I just going to, you know, learn information that I can learn by reading articles online? Mm-hmm. But it definitely went a lot deeper. And it was pretty much, I mean, when you say diet, lifestyle, and movement, not necessarily exercise, but movement, it covered all those topics in about, I don't know, I think it might have been 13 chapters. So it goes, and it also goes into like, if you have a practice of your own, how to implement what you learn to your, clients.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it really just went through, you know, comparing it first, it starts off, you know, with our, ancestors and everything back in the day, and how it's kind of like shaped us to who we are now, it just applied the diet aspect, the exercise aspect, and lifestyle aspect and kind of compared it to that and, I mean, the modern world and what's changed and then what our bodies are or how they're made to live and how they're made to be fueled.
Mm-hmm. And have you been able, has it changed anything for you personally? Like, did you change any of your diet and lifestyle after doing the course?
It really just supported and like kind of helped me realize that what I'm doing really is working and worth it in the long term. And it also, I mean, because when it would, like, there was a chapter on sleep and how it went down to like the process of all your hormones and just everything that happens in all those sleep cycles. So it really just helped me, you know, learn at a much deeper level. And I mean, really take it seriously, not just be like, oh yeah, I need a lot of sleep to get better. It's, you know, so those kind of things, it really just helped me, you know, hold on to them even stronger. And I mean, and have hope really.
Right.
For healing.
Of course. And then, so I guess the purpose of the certification is to help you help others. And right. I couldn't help wondering whether you have been able to or have any plans to help other people?
Right. So right now I haven't really used it outside of like writing articles on my blog, like based off of what I learned, but it's definitely something that I'll take with me in the future because I mean, ultimately my dream is to have my own business of some sort, you know, that has like the medical aspect with the food aspect. And to help other people, I'm not sure. I mean, I would love to help other people with chronic Lyme or just people in general. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of like, I was looking at a bunch of different nutrition certification courses and I was like, I don't know if I really want to do those. Cause I don't know if it's going to really like push me into what I'm going to do through college. So that's why I came to it. Cause I thought it was like the perfect starting point. to do a course like that, to really, you know, first to see if it's really what I wanted to do in my future. And also just as a starting point.
Mm-hmm. I'm really interested to know where you go next with this. So you mentioned that you just started an online college. So what courses are you taking right now?
Right now, I'm just taking general education courses. But right now it's public speaking and English literature, interpreting English. So nothing too serious. I'm just kind of, you know, getting used to, because I've only ever done one course at a time with being sick. So right now I'm taking two, and then I'm going to, you know, continue to add more. But ultimately, once I'm well enough, I really want to go. Well, at least I think I want to go. I want to go to med school.
Oh, wow. How exciting.
So, yeah. So that's kind of my goal.
Uh-huh. Well, what's it like, you know, so you just turned 19. Am I right in thinking that?
Yep.
Yeah. Happy birthday. It wasn't that long ago, was it? I saw it on your website.
Thank you.
So how do you think you compare to other 19-year-old girls? And what do you think when you see, you mean, I live in a suburban town called Scotts Valley in California, and I see, you know, the kids on the way to school with their Starbucks drinks, you know, those things that come in like a plastic cup with a plastic dome on the top. And then there's underneath the plastic dome, there's 1,000 calories of hydrogenated fats whipped up into a frenzy with like some sort of weird fructose syrup thing on the top. So what do you think when you see people eating things like that?
Well, first I'm like, wow, I can't believe like the human body is so skilled that like not everyone's as sick as I am.
Right.
Because they can bounce back from it. When I look at other girls my age, I try not to look unless they're my close friend, which if they're my close friend, they usually are into some sort of like food aspect or like eat paleo or something. I try not to. I'm just like, when I see other girls, I'm just, I don't know. I mean, at first when I got sick, it was kind of like comparing was, you know, something that kind of like dragged me down. But now it's not, you know, I look at them and I don't know. I don't really, I mean, obviously there might be a big difference in the way I eat and like what I want to do with my life. But, and when I see a Frappuccino from Starbucks, I'm like, oh my gosh. And just like everything runs through my head about like what's in that, what it's going to do their body. But then I'm just like, oh well, I'll go eat my organ meat and be okay.
You're not really being deprived. The only thing that I think eating this way is you know, look at the pictures on your blog, like it's still fantastic food and I'm sure it tastes amazing. It's just the preparation time, right? Like you have to put so much more effort into shopping and cooking to get that end result than you do if you just go into Starbucks and buy the Frappuccino.
Yeah.
But I'm just wondering, you know, like how many of your peers know about the blog and know about what you've been doing and the types of results that you've been getting and whether, you know, they're affected at all. Who do you think the average person is that reads your blog that understands what you're doing?
I wouldn't say, I'm not sure not a lot of kids my age read it. The ones that do, you know, the girls that are my age, they usually reach out to me, which I love, you know, hearing from them and getting to know them and all that. But I would say it's probably like, you know, people my parents' age or a little younger. And then as far as people around where I live, it's definitely just, you know, family, friends. You know, they might not see me for like a month, but when they see me the next month, they're kind of like, wow, like I see that you've made progress, even if you don't feel like it at all. So, but I think it's kind of like, it's not teenagers, kind of like in between, I feel like, is who reads my blog and makes recipes from it and kind of gets what I'm doing.
So there's no, well, I mean, it's a really, I worry about my daughter who I just mentioned before we got onto this call, who's tall too. You know, you would be a fantastic role model for her. And I wonder whether she could be influenced by that kind of blogging in the future. But I don't really know. What do you think? Is it realistic for like a young girl to be influenced by blogs? Or do you think that people don't read blogs until they get to a certain age?
I mean, depends what you're surrounded by. I knew about blogs and started reading them when I was like 11, 12. So, I mean, it seems like she's in an atmosphere where, you know, food and lifestyle is a big aspect. And like, I see photos of what your wife feeds her and I'm like, this is awesome.
But I just wonder, you know, because you've had this incredibly powerful motivator in the chronic Lyme to force you almost into this way of eating and the lifestyle that goes with it. And I worry that, you know, if you've never had anything wrong with you and, you know, why would you care? Like, she's just going to get to the point where she can realize she's able to make her own choices and just not have any reason just, you know, not to just eat anything.
I don't know. I also feel like the blogging world has definitely got a lot bigger in the past, like even the past like 2 years. Mm-hmm. It's really grown. So I think she could be influenced.
Cool.
In a positive way.
I hope so.
Yes.
We need more people.
Especially
like
with all the social media. I mean, yeah. It gets out there.
Yeah, it's so easy to reach people now. Yeah. What do you think is, you know, with chronic Lyme, I always wonder why is it that some people just like, I mean, so I've got friends that ride mountain bikes and they get bitten by ticks all the time, you know, and they get the bullseye rash, all of that. And they go to the doctor and the doctor just gives them some antibiotics and that's the end of it. Like, they don't even think about it ever again and they don't get sick and they keep winning bike races and it's just an absolute no-brainer. And, you know, for other people, it's this completely debilitating chronic illness. And you've just told me about all the diet and lifestyle interventions that you've made that's made a huge difference. What do you think, you know, might be the difference between these two groups of people?
Well, first of all, that they found it right away. I mean, that makes a huge... Mm. The fact that their immune system responded and gave them a bullseye rash is big. Because, I mean, I never even had a rash. I know a lot of the people I know that have chronic Lyme disease, they didn't have a rash. Mm-hmm. And it kind of just went dormant in their body until, like, years later when it decided to rear its ugly head. So, that's a big component. Otherwise, it still strikes me funny because I know people, you know, that'll hunt and get a bunch of tick bites and they're fine. But, I mean, I can't help but wonder if it's really going to... If it will come back, you know, in their later years in the form of some other illness or condition. So, I mean, you can't know that because that's the future. But but my neurologist, he believes that it has to do with your genetic makeup, you know, and the way and then the type of like if you get bit by Borrelia or if it's Borrelia and then a bunch of co-infections, just like how your body reacts. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I don't really know an exact answer to that question, but...
Yeah, of course, it's a ridiculously difficult question. But I just wonder, you know, whether some people, you know, they're already immunocompromised or maybe they're sensitive to gluten or they've got, you know, three other things going on already and then they get bitten by a tick. And I've been reading this fascinating book by Stephen Booner. It's called Healing Lyme, and I'll link to that in the show notes as well. And who knows? Like some people, like you say, they never see the bullseye rash. And he talks about all the co-infections. It's a really interesting book. Was it just the one spirochete that you've had trouble with, or have there been other co-infections and parasites also?
Parasites have been a chronic issue, which is something I'm still trying to get a hold of, you know. And the co-infection it hasn't really flared up too much lately, but the main one for me is Bartonella, which we never officially diagnosed through testing, but I would get the rashes up my abdomen, so it was kind of obvious what it was.
Right.
So, yeah, and then, I mean, I've struggled with a little bit with Babesia, but Bartonella and parasites are the main ones that I've struggled with.
Okay. And then have you taken any herbs or anything to treat those or?
Yes, I did. So, well, currently I'm not taking anything for the Bartonella. I did an extensive herbal protocol with my functional medicine doctor about a year and a half ago. And that was really intense.
Oh, really?
So I haven't gotten any treatment since then to directly address it because I went on the PK protocol. But the parasites... I did with him also, and then it kind of got pushed to the back burner because other things I was dealing with were not being fixed. And so that's initially when I went on the PK protocol, and we were hoping that it would you know, kill off or, you know, support my body enough that I could get rid of the parasites, but not so much. So that's actually what we're currently focusing on right now is the parasites and getting treatment. So I'm not on any herbs now, but I hope to be at least in the next month or so.
Interesting. And then what's the state of the testing like? I'm kind of interested to know, you know, we do some stool testing and urinary organic acids in our practice. And I was just wondering what sort of testing you've done and how helpful that's been. Yeah, for all of it. Yeah, I'm kind of interested to know what the, because I think one of the problems with Lyme has always been that it's not that easy to test for the spirochete, mm-hmm. but I mean, also the co-infections. Like, so what kind of testing have you done and how helpful has it been?
Well, initially, I did, of course, you know, starting way back when I did the standard Western blot, which mm-hmm. I don't remember what my results were. That's one that, you know, it doesn't even test the bands that Lyme is known to be on in the, you know, in the blood and to affect. Mm-hmm. So that's like really not helpful usually, unless it's a super active infection. The other test, I really don't know the name because it's my neurologist, he created his own test for oh, wow. a hospital in, I want to say in somewhere in Connecticut in New York. I would have to pull it up to know the name. I don't want to say the wrong hospital, but right. So that's who initially found my Lyme. And then I know that my functional medicine doctor has tested for co-infections. He never found anything through those, but as far as parasites, there's a doctor, Dr. Caslow in New York City, is who, you know, does the parasite swabbing. And then he looks at the slides right there. You know, he doesn't send it off to anyone.
Wow.
So yeah, he's crazy awesome. He's actually who I just saw again to get a positive, that I got the positive parasite test back from. But then my functional medicine doctor, you know, he'll do the Genova stool and parasite testing. Mm-hmm. And then recently he had me do the U-Biome one,
mm-hmm.
That kit, which I haven't gotten my results back yet with from, but that one, and I can't recall the name of the other ones, but I've done a lot through Genova, it okay. seems like.
Yeah, that's so interesting. The Genova stool test is it's quite novel and it uses PCR DNA analysis.
Mm.
But in my experience, I've run about 30 of them at one time in our practice, and they never found any parasites at all.
Hmm.
And
yeah.
I think it's a bit suspect, actually, the parasitology yeah. on that test. And I've seen a lot more positive results on the doctor's data and then also the biohealth stool tests. Mm. And they're very, very specific, these tests.
Right.
So if the microbiologist has really seen, you know, Giardia in the sample, then he's not lying. Like it's really right. there. So there's no false positives, but there's a good chance of a false negative. So yeah, it's tricky, but
it's very tricky.
Yeah, and I wondered, like, you know, have you ever done any urinary organic acids testing?
Oh man,
too many tests. You don't know.
I haven't recently. It would have been something that I did like back when I had super bad brain fog and I just don't remember.
Uh-huh.
So.
Yeah. No, I was just wondering because in Stephen Booner's book, he talks about quinolinic acid, which is a neurotoxin in Lyme disease. And I thought, wait, quinolinic acid? I know that. It's on our organic acids test. And I looked and sure enough, it is. It's a metabolite of the chiourinate pathway. You start off with tryptophan. And,
You know what? I'm sure my doctor, my PK protocol doctor, has done it then.
So I was just wondering whether you'd seen an elevation of quinolinic acid on that test.
I would have to pull something up, but I don't have it on my computer. But I'm sure because they test all of that. Like, it's so extensive.
Uh-huh. Excellent. Well, this has been a fascinating conversation. Thank you so much. What would you be your advice then? You know, if you had any advice for somebody that's just being diagnosed with Lyme, like what would you do? Would you tell them to take probiotics or switch to a paleo diet or maybe nothing at all? What would you say?
Well, I would definitely say, you know, now that I've gone through it all and like gone through all the changes in my diet and see how it's helped me and see how, you know, kind of how far back it pushed me, you know, not eating paleo, mm-hmm. how it compromised my body even more and kind of created these additional issues, I would definitely say, you know, start eating paleo. Even, you know, because not everyone is affected in the gut with Lyme. Sometimes it's only neurological symptoms, mm-hmm. and they're like, well, how could this really help me? Because my gut's fine. But it really does make a difference. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I would definitely say, you know, like, play around with the diet aspect. And I mean, I always say, be your own advocate. You know, if you get a negative test, don't get discouraged. Don't, you know, stop pursuing a diagnosis.
That's great advice. Yeah, no, I think that's great advice for a number of different conditions. I think is just keep doing that investigation, keep digging. You will get answers if you keep looking. It's only when you give up. If you give up, it's like, okay, well, you're definitely not going to get an answer now.
Right.
Well, this has been fantastic. So where can you tell us more? So beyondthebiteforlife.com, I will link to that, is your website. Is there anything else you'd like people to know about or any place they can come and find you?
Well, I mean, I'm all over Instagram.
Oh, yeah,
Facebook.
Your Instagram account is great.
Thank you. That is Beyond the Bite for Life as well, mm-hmm. the name of my website. And that's where I primarily am. They can always email me with questions if they have any. I have this little tight knit community that I created probably about less than 6 months ago for those with chronic Lyme. It's like a little community where we can, you know, encourage each other or, you know, give each other resources or anything like that. So that's called Beyond the Bite Community. So if anyone, you know, was interested in that or had any questions about that.
Fantastic. Okay, that's brilliant. Well, thank you so very much, Gabriella. I'll look forward to speaking to you again soon.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, cheers then. Bye-bye.